17. Lovely Terra, mother of worlds. What poet, whether or not he has been privileged to visit her, has not tried to express the homesick longing of men for mankind's birthplace, her cool green hills, cloud-graced skies, restless oceans, her warm maternal charm? Thorby's first sight of legendary Earth was by viewscreen of GMC Ariel. Guard Captain Nganji, skipper of the mail ship, stepped up the game and pointed out arrow-sharp shadows of the Egyptian pyramids. Thorby didn't realize the historical significance and was looking in the wrong place. But he enjoyed seeing a planet from space. He had never been thus privileged before. Thorby had a dull time in the Ariel. The mail ship, all legs and tiny payload, carried a crew of 3 engineers and 3 astrogators, all of whom were usually on watch or asleep. He started off badly because Captain Nganji had been annoyed by a hold-for-passenger dispatch from the Hydra. Mail ships don't like to hold. The mail must go through. But Thorby behaved himself, served the pre-cooked meals, and spent his time plowing through the library, a drawer under the skipper's bunk. By the time they approached Sol, the commanding officer was over his peak, to have the feeling brought back by orders to land at Galactic Enterprises Field instead of Guard Base. But Nganji shook hands as he gave Thorby his discharge and the paymaster's draft. Instead of scrambling down a rope ladder, mail couriers have no hoists, Thorby found that a lift came up to get him. It leveled off opposite the hatch and offered easy exit. A man in spaceport uniform of Galactic Enterprises met him. "Mr. Rudbeck?"
"That's me, I guess."
"This way, Mr. Rudbeck, if you please." The elevator took them below ground and into a beautiful lounge. Thorby, mussed and none too clean from weeks in a crowded steel box, was uneasy. He looked around. 8 or 10 people were there, 2 of whom were a gray-haired, self-assured man and a young woman. Each was dressed in more than a year's pay for a guardsman. Thorby did not realize this in the case of the man, but his trader's eye spotted it in the female. It took money to look that demurely provocative. In his opinion, the effect was damaged by her high-fashion hairdo, a rising structure of green blending to gold. He blinked at the cut of her clothes. He had seen fine ladies in Jubalpur, where the climate favored clothing only for decoration, but the choice in skin display seemed different here. Thorby realized uneasily that he was again going to have to get used to new customs. The important-looking man met him as he got out of the lift.
"Thor, welcome home, lad."
He grabbed Thorby's hand.
"I'm John Weemsby. Many is the time I've bounced you on my knee. Call me Uncle Jack, and this is your cousin, Leda."
The girl with green hair placed hands on Thorby's shoulders and kissed him. He did not return it. He was much too startled. She said, "It's wonderful to have you home, Thor."
Thanks.
"And now you must greet your grandparents," Weemsby announced. "Professor Bradley and your grandmother Bradley."
Bradley was older than Weemsby, slight and erect, a paunch, neatly trimmed beard. He was dressed like Weemsby in daytime formal jacket, padded tights and short cape, but not as richly. The woman had a sweet face and alert blue eyes. Her clothing did not resemble that of Leda, but seemed to suit her. She pecked Thorby on the cheek and said gently, "It's like having my son come home." The elderly man shook hands vigorously.
"That's a miracle, son. You look just like our boy, your father. Doesn't he, dear?"
"He does."
There was chit-chat, which Thorby answered as well as he could. He was confused and terribly self-conscious. It was more embarrassing to meet these strangers who claimed him as their blood than it had been to be adopted into Sisu. These old people, they were his grandparents? Thorby couldn't believe it, even though he supposed they were. To his relief, the man, Weemsby, who claimed to be his Uncle Jack, said with polite authority,
"We had better go. I'll bet this boy is tired. So I'll take him home, eh?"
The Bradleys murmured agreement. The party moved toward the exit. Others in the room, all men, none of whom had been introduced, went with them. In the corridor they stepped on a glideway,
which picked up speed until walls were whizzing past.
It slowed as they neared the end, miles away, Philby judged, and was stationary for them to step off. This place was public. The ceiling was high, and the walls were lost in crowds. Philby recognized the flavor of a transport station. The silent men with them moved into blocking positions, and their party proceeded in a direct line, regardless of others. Several persons tried to break through, and one man managed it. He shoved a microphone at Thorby and said rapidly,
"Mr. Rudbeck, what is your opinion of the—"
A guard grabbed him. Mr. Weemsby said quickly,
"Later, later, call my office, you'll get the story."
Lenses were trained on them, but from high up and far away. They moved into another passageway. A gate closed behind them. Its glideway deposited them at an elevator which took them to a small enclosed airport. A craft was waiting, and beyond it a smaller one, both sleek, smooth, flattened ellipsoids. Weemsby stopped.
"You'll be all right?"
he asked Mrs. Bradley.
"Oh, surely,"
answered Professor Bradley.
"The car was satisfactory."
"Excellent. A nice hop, and I'm sure a good one back."
"Well, then we'll say goodbye. I'll call you when he's had a chance to get oriented. You understand."
"Oh, surely. We'll be waiting."
Thorby got a peck from his grandmother, a clap on the shoulder from his grandfather. Then he embarked with Weemsby and Lita in the larger car. Its skipper saluted Mr. Weemsby, then saluted Thorby. Thorby managed to return it. Mr. Weemsby paused in the central passage.
"Why don't you kids go forward and enjoy the hop? I've got calls waiting."
"Certainly, Daddy."
"You'll excuse me, Thor. Business goes on. It's back to the mines for Uncle Jack."
"Of course, Uncle Jack." Lita led him forward, and they sat down in a transparent bubble on the forward surface. The car rose straight up until they were several thousand feet high. It made a traffic circle sweep over a desert plain, then headed north toward mountains.
"Comfy?" asked Lita.
"Quite. Except that I'm dirty and must."
"There's a shower abaft the lounge, but we'll be home shortly, so why not enjoy the trip?"
"All right."
Thorby did not want to miss any of Fabulous Terra. It looked, he decided, like Hecate. No, more like Woolamura, except that he had never seen so many buildings. The mountains? He looked again. "What's that white stuff? Alum?" Lita looked.
"Why, that's snow. Those are the Sangre de Cristos."
"Snow," Thorby repeated. "That's frozen water."
"You haven't seen snow before?"
"Well, I've heard of it. It's not what I expected."
"It is frozen water, and yet it isn't exactly. It's more feathery."
She reminded herself of Daddy's warning. She must not show surprise at anything.
"You know," she offered, "I think I'll teach you to ski."
Many miles and some minutes were used, explaining what skiing was and why people did it. Phoebe filed it away as something he might try, more likely not. Lita said that a broken leg was all that could happen.
"This is fun."
Besides, she had mentioned how cold it could be. In Thorby's mind, cold was linked with hunger, beatings, and fear.
"Maybe I could learn," he said dubiously. "But I doubt it."
"Oh, sure you can."
She changed the subject. "Forgive my curiosity, Thor, but there is a faint accent in your speech."
"I didn't know I had an accent."
"I didn't mean to be rude."
"But you weren't." "I suppose I picked it up in Jubalpur. That's where I lived longest."
"Jubalpur, let me think. That's,
capital of the Nine Worlds?"
"Oh, yes. One of our colonies, isn't it?"
Philby wondered what the Sargon would think of that.
Not exactly. It's a sovereign empire now. Their tradition is that they were never anything else. They don't like to admit that they derive from Terra."
"What an odd point of view."
A steward came forward with drinks and dainty nibbling foods. Thor accepted a frosted tumbler and sipped cautiously. Lita continued,
"What were you doing there, Thor, going to school?"
Thorby thought of Pop's patient teaching.
decided that was not what she meant. I was begging.
What?
I was a beggar.
Excuse me?
A beggar? A licensed mendicant? A person who asks for alms?
That's what I thought you said, she answered. I know what a beggar is. I've read books, but excuse me, Thor. I'm just a homegirl. I was startled.
She was not a homegirl. She was a sophisticated woman, adjusted to her environment. Since her mother's death, she had been her father's hostess, and could converse with people from other planets with aplomb, handling small talk of a large dinner party with gracious efficiency in three languages. Lita could ride, dance, sing, swim, ski, supervise a household, do arithmetic slowly, read and write, if necessary, and make the proper responses. She was an intelligent, pretty, well-intentioned woman, culturally equivalent to a superior female headhunter, able, adjusted, and skilled.
But this strange lost-found cousin was a new bird to her. She said hesitantly,
Excuse my ignorance, but we don't have anything like that on Earth. I have trouble visualizing it. Was it terribly unpleasant?
Thorby's mind flew back. He was squatting in Lotus Seat in the great plaza with Pop sprawled beside him, talking.
It was the happiest time of my life, he said simply.
Oh.
It was all she could manage. But Daddy had left them so that she could get to work. Asking a man about himself never failed.
How does one get started, Thor? I wouldn't know where to begin.
I was taught, you see, I was up for sale, and
he thought of trying to explain Pop, decided to let it wait. An old beggar bought me.
Bought you?
Well, I was a slave.
Lita felt as if she had stepped off into water over her head. Had he said cannibal, vampire, or warlock, she would have been no more shocked. She came up, mentally gasping.
Thor, if I've been rude, I'm sorry, but we all are curious about the time. Goodness, it's been over 15 years that you've been missing. But if you don't want to answer, just say so. You were a nice little boy, and I was fond of you. Please don't slap me down if I ask the wrong question.
You don't believe me?
How could I? There haven't been slaves for centuries.
Thorby wished that he had never had to leave the Hydra, and gave up. He had learned in the guard that the slave trade was something many fracky in the inner world simply hadn't heard of.
You knew me when I was little?
Oh, yes.
Why can't I remember you? I can't remember anything back before I was I can't remember Terra.
She smiled. I'm 3 years older than you. When I saw you last, I was 6, so I remember, and you were 3, so you've forgotten.
Oh. Thorby decided that here was a chance to find out his own age. How old are you now? She smiled wryly.
Now I'm the same age you are, and I'll stay that age until I'm married.
Turn about, Thorby. When you ask the wrong question, I shan't be offended. You don't ask a lady her age on Terra. You assume that she is younger than she is.
So?
Thorby pondered this curious custom. Among people, a female claimed the highest age she could for status.
So? For example, your mother was a lovely lady, but I never knew her age. Perhaps she was 25 when I knew her. Perhaps 40.
You knew my parents?
Oh, yes. Uncle Crichton was a darling with a boomy voice. He used to give me handfuls of dollars to buy candy sticks and balloons with my own sweaty little hand.
She frowned.
But I can't remember his face. Isn't that silly? Never mind, Thor. Tell me anything you want to.
I'd be happy to hear anything you don't mind telling.
I don't mind, Thorby answered. But while I must have been captured, I don't remember it. As far as I remember, I never had parents. I was a slave, several places, and masters, until I reached Jubalpore. Then I was sold again, and it was the luckiest thing that ever happened to me.
Lita lost her company smile. She said in a still voice,
You really mean it? Or do you?
Thorby suffered the ancient annoyance of the returned traveler.
If you think that slavery has been abolished, well, it's a big galaxy,
Shall I roll up my trouser leg and show you?
Show me what, Thor?
My slave's mark.
The tattoo a factor uses to identify merchandise.
He rolled up his left trouser. See? The date is my manumission. It's Sarganese, a sort of Sanskrit. I don't suppose you can read it. She stared round-eyed.
How horrible! How perfectly horrible!
He covered it.
Depends on your master, but it's no good.
But why doesn't somebody do something?
He shrugged. It's a long way off.
But...
She stopped as her father came out.
Hey, kids, enjoying the hop, Thor?
Yes, sir, the scenery is wonderful.
The Rockies aren't a patch on the Himalayas, but our Tetons are pretty wonderful. And there they are, huh? We'll be home soon,
he pointed.
See? There's Rudbeck.
That city is named Rudbeck?
It used to be Johnson's Hole, or some such, when it was a village. But I wasn't speaking of Rudbeck City, I meant our home, your home, Rudbeck. You can see the tower above the lake, with the Grand Tetons behind it, eh? Most magnificent setting in the world. You're Rudbeck, of Rudbeck at Rudbeck. Rudbeck Cubed, your father called it. But he married into the name and wasn't impressed by it. I like it. It has a rolling thunder, and it's good to have a Rudbeck back in residence.
Thorby wallowed in his bath, from needle shower through hot pool whose sides and bottom massaged him with a thousand fingers, to lukewarm swimming plunge that turned cooler while he was in it. He was cautious in the last, having never learned to swim. And he had never had a valet. He had noticed that Rudbeck had dozens of people in it, not many for its enormous size, but he began to realize that most of them were servants. This impressed him not as much as it might have. He knew how many, many slaves staffed any rich household on Jubal. He did not know that a living servant on Terra was the peak of ostentatious waste, greater than sedan chairs on Jubal, much greater than the lavish hospitality at gatherings. He simply knew that valets made him nervous, and now he had a squad of three. Thorby refused to let anyone bathe him. He gave in to being shaved because the available razor was a classic straight edge, and his own would not work on Rudbeck's power supply. Otherwise, he merely accepted advice about unfamiliar clothing. The clothing waiting for him in wardrobe loads did not fit perfectly. The chief valet snipped and re-welded, muttering apologies. He had Thorby attired, ruffled jabot to tights, when a footman appeared.
Mr. Weensby sends greetings to Rudbeck and asks that he come to the Great Hall.
Thorby memorized the route as he followed. Uncle Jack, in Midnight and Scarlet, was waiting with Leda, who was wearing... Thorby was at a loss. Colors kept changing, and some of it was hardly there. But she looked well. Her hair was now iridescent. He spotted among her jewels a bauble from Finster, and wondered if it had shipped in Sisu. Why, it was possible that he had listed it himself. Uncle Jack said jovially,
"There you are, lad. Refreshed. We won't wear you out. Just a family dinner."
The dinner included 12 people, and started with a reception in the Great Hall. Drinks, appetizers, passed by soft-footed servants. Music, while others were presented.
"Rudbeck of Rudbeck, Lady Wilkes. Your Aunt Jennifer, lad, come from New Zealand to welcome you. Rudbeck of Rudbeck, Judge Bruder and Mrs. Bruder. Judge as chief counsel."
And so on. Thorby memorized names, linked them with faces, thinking that it was like the family, except that relationship titles were not precise definitions. He had trouble estimating status. He did not know which of 80-odd relations cousin meant with respect to Leda, though he supposed that she must be a first cross-cousin, since Uncle Jack had a surname, not Rudbeck. So he thought of her as taboo, which would have dismayed her. He did realize that he must be in the sept of a wealthy family, but what his status was nobody mentioned, nor could he figure out status of others. Two of the youngest women dropped him curtsies. He thought the first had stumbled and tried to help her. But when the second did it, he answered by pressing his palms together. The older women seemed to expect him to treat them with respect. Judge Bruder, he could not classify.
He hadn't been introduced as a relative. Yet this was a family dinner. He fixed Thorby with an appraising eye and barked,
"Glad to have you back, young man. There should be a Rudbeck at Rudbeck. Your holiday has caused trouble, hasn't it, John?"
"More than a bit," agreed Uncle Jack. "But we'll get straightened out. No hurry. Give the lad a chance to find himself."
"Surely, surely. Thumb in the dyke."
Phoebe wondered what a dyke was, but Lita came up and placed her hand on his elbow. She steered him to the banquet hall. Others followed. Phoebe sat at one end of a long table with Uncle Jack at the other. Aunt Jennifer was on Thorby's right, and Lita on his left. Aunt Jennifer started asking questions, and supplying answers. He admitted that he had just left the guard. She had trouble understanding that he had not been an officer. He let it ride and mentioned nothing about Jubalpore. Lita had made him wary of the subject. It did not matter. He asked a question about New Zealand, and received a guidebook lecture. Then Lita turned from Judge Bruder and spoke to Thorby. Aunt Jennifer turned to the man on her right. The tableware was in part strange, especially chop tongs and skewers, but spoons were spoons and forks were forks. By keeping his eye on Lita, he got by. Food was served formally, but he had seen grandmother so served. Table manners were not great trouble to a man coached by Fritz's sharp-tongued kindness. Not until the end was he stumped. The butler-in-chief presented him with an enormous goblet, splashed wetness in it, and waited. Lita said softly, "Taste it, nod, and put it down." He did so. As the butler moved away, she whispered, "Don't drink it, it's bottled lightning. By the way, I told Daddy, no toasts." At last the meal was over. Lita again cued him, "Stand up." He did, and everyone followed.
The family dinner was just a beginning.
Uncle Jack was in evidence only at dinners, and not always then. He excused his absences with,
"Someone has to keep the fires burning. Business won't wait."
As a trader, Thorby understood that business was business, but he looked forward to a long talk with Uncle Jack instead of so much social life. Lita was helpful but not informative. "Daddy is awfully busy. Different companies and things. It's too complicated for me. Let's hurry. The others are waiting." Others were always waiting. Dancing, skiing. Thorby loved the flying sensation, but considered it a chancy way to travel,
particularly when he fetched up in a snowbank, having barely missed a tree.
Card parties, dinners with young people at which he took one end of the table and Lita the other, more dancing, hops to Yellowstone to feed the bears, midnight suppers, garden parties. Although Rudbeck Estate lay in the lap of the Tetons with snow around it, the house had an enormous tropical garden under a dome so pellucid that Thorby did not realize it was there until Lita had him touch it. Lita's friends were fun, and Thorby gradually became sophisticated in small talk. The young men called him Thor instead of Rudbeck, and called Lita Slugger. They treated him with familiar respect, and showed interest in the fact that he had been in the guard and had visited many worlds, but they did not press personal questions. Thorby volunteered little, having learned his lesson. But he began to tire of fun. A gathering was wonderful, but a working man expects to work. The matter came to a head. A dozen of them were skiing, and Thorby was alone on the practice slope. A man glided down and snowplowed to a stop.
People hopped in and out at the estate's field day and night. This newcomer was Joel Delacroix.
"Hi, Thor."
"Hi, Joe. I've been wanting to speak to you."
"I have an idea I wanted to discuss, after you take over. Can I arrange to see you, without being baffled by 4011 secretaries?"
"When I take over?"
"Or later, at your convenience. I want to talk to the boss. After all, you're the heir. I don't want to discuss it with Weemsby, even if he would see me."
Joe looked anxious.
"All I want is 10 minutes. Say 5 if I don't interest you at once. Rudbeck's promise, eh?"
Thorby tried to translate. "Take over? Heir?" He answered carefully, "I don't want to make any promises now, Joel."
Delacroix shrugged. Okay, think about it, huh? I can prove it's a moneymaker.
I'll think about it, Thorby agreed. He started looking for Lita. He got her alone and told her what Joel had said. She frowned slightly.
It probably wouldn't hurt, since you aren't promising anything. Joel is a brilliant engineer, but better ask Daddy.
That's not what I meant. What did he mean, take over?
Why, he will, eventually.
Take over what?
Everything. After all, you're Rudbeck of Rudbeck.
What do you mean by everything?
She
swept an arm at mountain and lake, at Rudbeck City beyond.
All of it. Rudbeck. Lots of things. Things personally yours, like your sheep station in Australia and the house in Mallorca, and business things. Rudbeck Associates, as many things, here and other planets. I couldn't begin to describe them, but they're yours, or maybe ours, for the whole family is in it. But you are the Rudbeck of Rudbeck.
As Joel said, the heir. Thorby looked at her while his lips grew dry. He licked them and said, "Why wasn't I told?" She looked distressed.
"Thor, dear, we've let you take your time. Daddy didn't want to worry you."
"Well," he said, "I'm worried now. I'd better talk to Uncle Jack." John Weemsby was at dinner, but so were many guests. As they were leaving, Weemsby motioned Thorby aside. "Lita tells me you're fretting."
"Not exactly. I want to know some things."
"You shall. I was hoping that you would tire of your vacation. Let's go to my study."
They went there. Weemsby dismissed his second shift secretary and said,
"Now, what do you want to know?"
"I want to know," Thorby said slowly, "what it means to be Rudbeck of Rudbeck."
Weemsby spread his hands.
"Everything and nothing. You are the titular head of the business. Now that your father is dead, if he is."
"Is there any doubt?"
"Well, I suppose not. Yet you turned up."
"Supposing he is dead, what am I? Lita seems to think I own just about everything. What did she mean?"
Weemsby smiled.
"You know girls. No head for business. The ownership of our enterprises is spread around. Most of it is in our employees. But if your parents are dead, you come into stock in Rudbeck Associates, which in turn has an interest in, sometimes a controlling interest, in other things. I couldn't describe it now. I'll have the legal staff do it. I'm a practical man, too busy making decisions to worry about who owns every share. But that reminds me, you haven't had a chance to spend much money, but you might want to."
Weemsby opened a drawer, took out a pad.
"There's a megabuck. Let me know if you run short."
Thorby thumbed through it. Terran currency did not bother him. $100 to the credit, which he thought of as 5 loaves of bread. A trick the supercargo taught him. 1,000 credits to the supercredit, 1,000 supercredits to the megabuck. So simple that the people translated other currencies into it for accounting. But each sheet was 10,000 credits, and there were 100 sheets.
Did I inherit this?
"Oh, that's just spending money. Checks, really. You convert them at dispensers and stores or banks. You know how?"
"No."
"Don't get a thumbprint on the sensitized area until you insert it in the dispenser. Have Lita show you. If that girl could make money the way she spends it, neither you nor I would have to work. But,
Weemsby added,
"since we do, let's do a little."
He took out a folder and spread papers.
"Although this isn't hard, just sign at the bottom of each, put your thumbprint by it, and I'll call Beth in to notarize. Here, we can open each one to the last page. I had better hold 'em. The consarned things curl up."
Weemsby held one for Thorby's signature. Thorby hesitated, then, instead of signing, reached for the document. Weemsby held on.
"What's the trouble?"
"If I'm going to sign, I ought to read it." He was thinking of something grandmother,
used to be downright boring about. Weemsby shrugged.
Well, they are routine matters that Judge Bruder prepared for you.
Weemsby placed the document on the others, tidied the stack, and closed the folder.
Well, these papers tell me to do what I have to do anyway. Somebody has to do the chores.
Why do I have to sign?
This is a safety measure.
I don't understand. Weemsby sighed.
The fact is, you don't understand business. No one expects you to. You haven't had any chance to learn. But that's why I have to keep slaving away. Business won't wait.
He hesitated.
Here's the simplest way to put it. When your father and mother went on a second honeymoon, they had to appoint someone to act while they were gone. I was the natural choice, since I was their business manager, and your grandfather's before that. He died before they went away. So I was stuck with it while they went jaunting. Oh, I'm not complaining. It's not a favor one would refuse a member of the family. Unfortunately, they did not come back. So I was left holding the baby. But now you are back, and we must make sure everything is orderly. First, it is necessary for your parents to be declared legally dead. That must be done before you can inherit. That will take a while, so here I am, your business manager, too, manager for all the family, and I don't have anything from you telling me to act. These papers do that.
Thorby scratched his cheek. If I haven't inherited yet, why do you need anything from me? Weemsby smiled.
I asked that myself. Judge Bruder thinks it is best to tie down all possibilities. Now, since you are of legal age...
Legal age? Thorby had never heard the term. Among the people, a man was old enough for whatever he could do.
Weemsby explained, So, since the day you passed your 18th birthday, you have been of legal age, which simplifies things. It means you don't have to become a ward of a court. We have your parents' authorization, now we add yours. And then it doesn't matter how long it takes the courts to decide that your parents are dead, or to settle their wills. Judge Bruder and I, and the others who have to do the work, can carry on without interruption. A time gap is avoided, huh? One that might cost the business many megabucks. Now, do you understand?
I think so.
Good! Let's get it done.
Weemsby started to open the folder. Grandmother always said to read before signing, then think it over. Uncle Jack, I want to read them.
You wouldn't understand them.
Probably not, Thorby picked up the folder. But I've got to learn.
Weemsby reached for the folder. It isn't necessary.
Thorby felt a surge of obstinacy. Didn't you say Judge Bruder prepared these for me?
Yes.
Then I want to take them to my apartment and try to understand them. If I'm Rudbeck of Rudbeck, I don't know what I'm doing.
Weemsby hesitated, then shrugged. Go ahead. You'll find that I'm simply trying to do for you what I've always been doing.
But I still ought to understand what I'm doing.
Very well. Good night.
Thorby read till he fell asleep. The language was baffling, but the papers did seem to be what Uncle Jack said they were. Instructions to John Weemsby to continue the routine business of a complex setup. He fell asleep full of terms like full power of attorney, all manners of business, receive and pay monies, revocable only by mutual consent, waiver of personal appearance, full faith and credence, and voting proxy in all stockholding and or directorial meetings, special or annual. As he dozed off, it occurred to him that he had not asked to see the authorizations given by his parents. Sometime during the night, he seemed to hear grandmother's impatient voice.
Then think it over. If you don't understand it, and the laws under which it will be executed, then don't sign it. No matter how much profit may appear to be in store, too lazy and too eager can ruin a trader.
He stirred restlessly.